Wait a minute. Don't run away. This next 45 minutes, Sam Jeeves is going to interview me and ask me all the questions you would like to ask me. Sam Jeeves has been collecting questions here all day, and so thank you very much, but sit down, because now the best part is coming.
That's the first time I've been able to see this presentation. It was done at the United Nations, and so it's always striking for me. So here's the thing, Dr. Walk. You know, a lot of this information is very reinforcing to a lot of us, and for some of us, it can be shocking. You know, we're talking a lot about the injustices of what our media has shown us, injustices of our research and our science, academic research that we usually kind of rely on to provide us great information. And kind of, you know, one of those things where oftentimes I know when we talk about longevity to our friends and to our family, and we say some of these things, that they oftentimes think like, oh, wait a second, you're trying to tell me that your products are here to treat or cure or prevent disease? And that's not what we're saying, are we, Dr. Waldeck? What we're saying is it's about nutrition, and it's about nutrients. And I think that's how you've always framed longevity is the 90 essential nutrients and how important nutrition is to all of this, right?
Well, let me simplify, if I may answer the question.
Sure.
Let me simplify the question. This is a very salient point. This is a very important point. We don't cure anything. God cures everything, right? The body wants to heal itself. God made our bodies to want to heal itself. Now, I want you to think of the blueprint of your dream home. You buy your lakefront piece of property with a mile lakefront. You got docks with your boats and everything, and you take this blueprint of your dream home and you throw it out in the middle of your lot there. Nothing's going to happen. But it's the blueprint. But you still need carpenters and bricklayers, right, and roofers. You need roofing tiles, you need flooring, you need brick, you need wood for the framing, you need concrete for the basement. You need asphalt for the driveway, you need glass for the windows and copper piping and sewers and all that kind of stuff, right? A lot of stuff's going to go, but you got the blueprint. DNA is the blueprint. Doctors believe, unfortunately incorrectly, that your genes are self-perpetuating. They are the whole world. And they can make everything that they're supposed to make. But they need the 90 essential nutrients to pull that off. They don't consider that. And so what we do is, again, we maximize our genetic potential for longevity and for health and fending off disease and speed and strength and intelligence, making good decisions and many other things ought to be genetically controlled by giving ourselves these 90 essential nutrients and just stand back and let the body do its thing. Just remember, there's only two reasons why it'll fail. You're a 300-pound guy and you're taking a dose for a 50-pound kid. And secondly, you're not absorbing. I suppose you could do both. You can underdose and not absorb. That'd be very bad. Okay, so... Yeah. We're just giving the body what it needs to heal itself. And people always say, is there any research to prove what you're saying, Wally? Because it's so outrageous.
Sure.
$100 billion worth of research. I say 60% of it's animal and 60% of it's human. Medical schools, veterinary schools, agricultural schools, pharmaceutical schools. $100 billion worth of research. So your doctor needs to have his head held underwater for a few minutes.
Exactly. Well, so I think that's important, you know. I mean, that is the greatest thing about longevity is that what we believe in is the fundamental foundational nutrients that are found in food. So when we are talking about our products, we're not talking about some crazy wild fruit that's on the side of the Himalayas or that there's some new ingredient that was discovered by some university or such. It's just natural nutrients that happen to be deficient in the foods that we eat. And that's why the products are so powerful. You know what, Dr. Waldeck, is that I think that every great man who has pioneered social change, it seems like there is one moment, one episode, one experience at times, or a few of them that have kind of set their course in the path to their destiny. Would you say that there was maybe a few experience or an episode that said to you that, you know, this solidified or reinforced your path to voicing this mission of nutritional deficiency and disease?
Oh, absolutely, Sanjeeves. Again, in the book Dead Doctors Don't Lie and in the book Epigenetics, and there's more detail in the book Epigenetics, And there's at least a dozen events that have taken place in a 75-year life. The first one, of course, was when I was 4 years old, I had facial tics and oinking noises like a pig and stuff, and got worse and worse and worse. By the time I was 9, I was disabled, and all my friends thought I was possessed by the devil, because it was not nice, it was ugly. And my mom, for some reason, took to a medical doctor, eye doctor, and her name was Mary Jane Skeffington. She was the best eye doctor in Missouri, I heard. I'm 9 years old. It was awful. So I go there, and she examines me. She said, well, I can't find anything wrong with Joel, but he does have long eyelashes, and I believe his eyelashes are hitting his glasses, curling back, and tickling his eyeballs. And so she gives me a Maybelline eyelash brush, and she says, I want you to retrain your eyelashes. Now, that was before Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I can see these 200-pound football players, and I weigh 90 pounds. They're going to rip my arms off and beat me to death with my own arms, right?
With your eyelash brush.
Yeah. So I said, that ain't going to work. And so the next day in school, everybody else went to lunch. I went to the library, and I asked the librarian where the science books were, and I found the little section on health, and I found a nurse's handbook, kind of like a Merck manual kind of thing for nurses. And I looked in the index under eyelids and eyelashes, couldn't find anything, so I just started going down the index, and I hit cramps under C's. Maybe it's a cramp. Went to the page said to go to, and it says calcium deficiency. Well, every morning before the bus would pick me up from school, one of my chores was to feed the little bull calves that we were going to sell at auction that month, and with the vitamin mineral enriched alfalfa pellets. That was one of my jobs. There's nothing else to do at 4 o'clock in the morning, so you'd read the labels and so forth, and it had all the minerals and everything in there, included calcium. That day after school, when everybody else was doing their thing, I ran from the bus, went to the barn, started eating handfuls of these alfalfa pellets. Next morning, I threw the Cheerios out to the chickens in the yard and filled my bowl with these alfalfa pellets and started putting milk in there. My mom freaks out. She's wanting to take them away. My dad said, let them have it. Nothing else is working. Let them try it, for goodness sakes. And in 3 days' time, praise God, I was cured. Oh. And initially, I was very, very scared because I knew that God had given me that information. Why me? Why did God give me that information? No 9-year-old figures this out. So that scared me. And I began to really study it. And by the time I had graduated high school, I was really on to the nutrition thing. And I was able to letter in three sports in high school. And here's a kid that was disabled. I'm lettering in three sports, wrestling and football and track. Okay. And so that was cool, and I lettered 2 years in a row up in the University of Missouri in wrestling and so forth. And this is a disabled kid, right? And I worked in the agriculture department, feeding the beef cattle, feeding and milking the dairy herds, working with the poultry department. I worked for my lunches and dinners because it didn't have any money, didn't have any grants or anything, so I had to do all this work to pay for everything in school. First Wallach to go to university. And I noticed that they're giving all these vitamins and minerals just like we used to do on the farm. Why are they doing all this? And of course, my soils professor, William Albrecht, who's a legend, he was my soils professor, and he's another one of my mentors, like Marlon Perkins. Everybody else is out drinking beer on the weekends. I'm sitting in Sanborn experimental fields with him every weekend, and he's telling me everything he knows. And so I learned about soil, and I learned about plants, nutrition, and so forth from him.
So Dr. Albright was...
Albrecht, yeah.
Okay.
Got me into that soil thing.
Into the soil.
Now, he knew that the soils were depleted because there was no more minerals in the soil. But he thought the answer was... waiting for the weather to break rocks and get more rock dust. He never made the relationship to wood ashes. He never made that relationship. And I kind of figured that out a little bit later when I was doing all those autopsies. And so I used to go to some of the houses where people had died from, and I wanted to know why they had so many problems and so forth. They still had, they had electricity. The ones who didn't have problems, they were hit by cars, they had wood stoves, kind of interesting stuff.
Now, there was a mineral institute at the University of Missouri, is that right? Was there a, I felt that I read at one time at the University of Missouri there was an institute that studied trace mineral research.
Well, that was William Albrecht.
Okay.
Yeah, that was him. And he was big into trace minerals and things. Very, very smart guy. But he believed that, he just loved rocks and how they would decompose with weather and freezing and cracking and all stuff. That was kind of his thing. He never made the relationship to the wood ashes. And at any rate, the next thing after that, of course, was in Africa, when I went to Africa for 2 years, working on the African Elephant Conservation Project and the White Rhino Conservation Project, I'm noticing that all the wild animals, all the wildebeest and the wild pigs and the elephants and the giraffe are all coming to these dirty, muddy ponds and drinking that, and the clear, sprinkling spring waters, only the people drank that. The animals never drank the clear, sparkling water. So I actually collected samples and sent them to the university for analysis, and guess what I found? The clear, sparkling water had no minerals in it, and the dirty, muddy water had all minerals in it. Okay, so the animals are smarter than the people. And then, of course, when you do 20,000 autopsies, 20 million chemistries, 20 million size special stains, and you find nutritional deficiency diseases that are thought to be genetic in humans and 40 species of animals, you know there's something wrong with the genetic theory. I mean,
how does
a kid figure all these things out? So I know that I've been guided all through this whole thing by the good Lord. Thank you very
much.
That's
great. That's great. You know, when we were talking about some of the neurological disorders, you talked a lot about the pathways. And I love how you've always brought in the pathology of disease and illness, because it really allows me to understand that the root causes of all of these different types of diseases and illnesses come from a very few places, right?
That's right.
And so will you talk a little bit about like that pathology link? You know, how is it that 90 essential nutrients, you know, oftentimes I'll talk about 90 essential nutrients and they'll say, you know what, that sounds like a snake oil. How could you think that just this set of nutrients is able to help or support 900 different diseases and illnesses, you know?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that. What disease are you talking about?
Just the pathology. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's look at diabetes. That's a very easy one to kind of understand. Blood sugar is not the disease. High blood sugar is a symptom. Just managing a symptom is like managing pain when you have arthritis. Is taking a painkiller going to help your arthritis? No, it just manages the pain. The arthritis keeps getting worse. Then you can't stand the pain anymore. You're taking 6 painkillers. Give me the surgery. Doctor doesn't even have to ask. You ask him. Same with diabetes. Okay, why do you get your legs cut off? Why do you go blind? It's not because you have high blood sugar. It's because you're missing those nutrients that are required for things to work. Now, when you have type 2 diabetes, which makes up 98% of the diabetic population all over the world, regardless of who these people are, 98% of the diabetics are type 2. Babies are being born with type 2 diabetes now. What's missing is a communication between insulin and the cell wall. Okay? There's a communication link there that's missing. Now, when you have type 2 diabetes and you take a pill like metformin, which it works for most people, you say, well, I took metformin for a couple of months and my blood sugar just kept going up. It never worked for me. They said, I turned into a type 1. No, you didn't turn into a type 1. You're still a type 2. Why couldn't that metformin work for them? They couldn't absorb it. They got a gluten intolerance. Get them gluten-free, get them on the healthy blood sugar pack, tell them to check their fasting blood sugar every morning before they medicate themselves, and their blood sugar drops. They reduce their medications, their doctors taught them to do. Tell them, follow your doctor's instructions, your blood sugar every morning. If your blood sugar drops, you need less medication. Your blood sugar goes up, take more medication, just like your doctor told you. But when they get down below 100 milligrams per deciliter, which is a number of their blood sugar, and they've been 400, 300, 200, and now it's like 87 for 2 weeks in a row without medication, they don't need medication anymore. But here comes the ultimate question, Sanjeev's. How long do you have to stay in the healthy blood sugar pack? Forever! For life!
Yeah. You know, I think this is really important because, you know, I know that many of you will oftentimes ask me questions and you'll say, you know, what is the protocol? You'll use this word, protocol. What's the protocol for this? I have a friend with this issue. What's the protocol? And number one, you're thinking of this as like medicine. That there is like this specific protocol to this particular health issue. And what I hope that you're understanding now is that the fundamental foundational philosophy of our bodies our health, and what Dr. Wallach has researched for 50 plus years is that fundamentally we just need these 90 essential nutrients on a consistent basis. And when you do that, the body has the ability to search for that weakness, bring its strength, and therefore deal with this symptom that you have, which is oftentimes the least of your issues, you know? So I just want to make sure you know that.
Let me make one more statement. Isn't he good? But to finish off that diabetes thing, what we're doing when we're giving them the healthy blood sugar pack is that mineral cofactor that's missing that gives you that connection. See, doctors will tell them, well, you're not making any insulin. That's why the metformin's not working. Your pancreas is dead. That's nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Check their insulin levels. Oh, that's a different story. They got tons of insulin. Well, then how come it's not working? They're missing that little connector there. So you take the healthy blood sugar pack, you give them the connector, and suddenly now your cell walls all recognize insulin, and it begins to work. Yeah. But they got to stay gluten-free forever. Got to stay on the 90 essential nutrients forever, just like they need oxygen forever. They need water forever. They need the 90 essential nutrients forever. The reason why they have diabetes, those nutrients are not there in that location. They're gluten intolerant, and so what few amounts there are, they're getting very little of it because they can't absorb it.
Yeah. Why do you think that Dead Doctors Don't Lie, the only the book only second to the Bible that has been published and read in the world, which is amazing, is so powerful today?
Well, because, as you say, everything in that book is based on those 20,000 autopsies. So it's based on facts, hard facts. And the truth is always the truth. And then everybody's had a bad experience with the medical system. Think about that. Everybody has had a bad experience with the medical system. And so they have a partnership or a camaraderie with that book and the stories and the various testimonies and the examples in the book. And of course, the title itself is intriguing. People always say, where'd you come up with that title? I was actually, in the beginning, before I had the title, I'm handing out obituaries of doctors. I particularly liked obituaries of sports medicine doctors who die at age 38 while they're jogging, or heart doctors who die of a heart attack at age 42, neurosurgeons who die of Parkinson's disease when they're 48, that kind of stuff. And I make copies, and I would hand them out at my lectures. Remember, this is back, we're talking in the 70s and 80s. And I had some audio cassette tapes, really exciting titles like Trace Minerals for a Long Life. You know, ugh. I sold 10 every year. But then there's one guy who's a professional football player, 320-pound tackle, and he had a son with muscular dystrophy, and you know, he heard me being interviewed about muscular dystrophy, and he came. He wanted to hear about muscular dystrophy, and I talked to him before the meeting. I said, we might as well stay and listen to the information. And we're in an auditorium in Florida. Not an auditorium. It was a gymnasium with a wooden floor and metal chairs. And he starts picking up these chairs. There's 80 people in there. And he's picking up these chairs. He's slamming them on the ground. He's throwing them around. These people are all huddled in the corner because they're afraid that he's going to kill everybody, right? I mean, this is a horrifying experience for everybody. And so I'm walking up to him trying to grab one of these chairs away from him. I said, okay, you got to stop what you're doing. You're scaring everybody here. I'm saying, why are you so upset? He said, well, I came here to learn about muscular dystrophy for my kid. And all you're doing is handing out these obituaries of dead doctors. Why are you handing out obituaries of dead doctors? I said, because only dead doctors don't lie.
Now you know. That's great. Now you know.
So that's where it came from. And so the title's a little intriguing. And one guy by the name of John Valenti bought 20 million copies of the audio cassette tape for $1 apiece. And he personally paid to have them mailed out.
Yeah.
20 million of them. And that branded the title. Went around the world. And it's, I don't know, it's 11 languages now. It's in Spanish, Portuguese, French. It's in Hindi now. We have the Hindi masters.
Oh, great.
So you need to review
that. I'm kind
that.
Of biased for that. Yes. Yeah. Finally, health to us. I guess.
It's in Mandarin and Cantonese. It's in Okinawan and Japanese. We do still have to translate it into Canadian.
So, Doc, you know, You have spent a considerable amount of time and energy and especially resources yourself and Steve Wallach and the Wallach family in defending nutrition, you know, and defending nutrition in a way that benefits the entire industry. Why do you feel it's so important for us to defend the rights of all of us with the information about what nutrition can do for our health?
Okay, that's a very, 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 very good question. And remember, God showed me the answer when I was 9 years old. That's a huge responsibility. And I've taken that on as a huge responsibility. I figured that I'm supposed to do whatever I can do to make sure that everybody gets the information. I was given this information, so I can somehow pass it on. And if anything I get's of any value, I got to make sure that I don't keep it for myself and a few close friends. I got to give it to everybody. And that's why that effort. And of course, one of the scariest pieces was for about 25 years there, starting in 1978 when I got fired from Emory University and Yerkes Primate Center for discovering the cause, prevention, and cure of cystic fibrosis, was that the medical system was recognizing that people were beginning to take care of themselves with vitamins and minerals. There was health food stores popping up everywhere. And they were trying to get very vigorously to make vitamins and minerals a prescription item, where you'd have to go to a doctor, pay for a office call, office visit, and then get a prescription from a doctor to get some B vitamins or to get some energy drink or something like that. It had B12 in it. And so a guy by the name of Clinton Miller and I and Char Murphy, the three of us for 25 years worked on it, and we got what was passed, a congressional act, the Deshaies Act. The three of us got passed. We created that act and we got it passed. Of course, we used the congressmen and senators from Utah there, and Clinton Miller was from Utah, so he knew all these guys. And so the Deshaies Act forever separates out vitamins and minerals from prescriptions, so a doctor cannot charge you if he says you need to go get some B vitamins. Okay? You go get some B vitamins. You don't need him to get, he's not the only source. Okay? And so it was important to me because the next step is you're going to need a prescription to buy a sweet potato. Okay, if there was found to be some value in a sweet potato, then the doctors want a prescription for that. And so that it took us 25 years, but the three of us got it done.
This is yeah.
So thank you, Char.
You know, yeah. You know, so just real quick, you know, if it wasn't for the Deshaies Act, there would be no dietary supplement industry. I got about 9 minutes, and so I would love to be able to ask you some little fun questions here a little bit. And so maybe like this first one here is that Steve. So what was Steve like as a kid? Yeah, what was he like? Was he a rambunctious kid? Did he get in trouble a lot? Did he break things? What was he like? Maybe that was just me, but.
No, that's a good question. We have to remember, he was conceived in Africa and he was born here, okay? And so he was a child. I was just here for a couple of months and he was born. And at that time, you know, I went through all this university stuff. And of course I came back to work on this big project, the Center for the Biology of Natural Systems with Marlon Perkins, and when I left St. Louis to go to these other places, we lived in the zoos, because most of these zoos have a house, you know, for the resident veterinarian or the top keeper or somebody. And so because they couldn't pay me very much, and I was a widower at that time, I had four kids, and Steve was a little kid, and I was mom and dad for 5 years, and we lived in these places. So at night, when everybody else is asleep, Steve and I would walk around the zoo. And we'd sit in front of various cages and talk about the different animals and things. And so he, by the time he was 10 years old, he knew as much biology as most PhDs graduating from biology.
Yeah.
Very good kid. Very helpful. Very smart kid. Great. He loved rockets. He used to make rockets.
He loved rockets?
Yeah, he was into rockets and that kind of stuff.
That's great. That's great. Well, really glad he didn't like blowing up stuff. He just liked rockets. So let's make sure. Yeah. And so, oh my goodness, I just forgot my next question about it. It was supposed to be a fun question. And it is... Oh no! All right. Well, no, no, what it is, Doc. Here's what it is. No, I'm trying to concentrate. The question that I wanted to ask you, which was really fun. Okay, here, when I was reading that doctors don't lie, and I think I got this because my parents are like this as well too. And when you and Dr. Malan got married, and you said, "Hey, we're gonna go live on this boat," there was maybe some issues with.
Oh, there was some issues.
Dr. Malan. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, there's a story leading up to why I was in Texas with four kids. Actually, two. The girls had gotten married and had their own families by then, and so I had Steve and Jeremiah with me. We're living on a boat. Of course, that's every guy's dream, to live on a yacht, right? So that's part of my dream, move down to Texas. So I sold my practice, which I had for 12 years in Portland, Oregon, and we moved down to Houston, Texas, lived on the boat, and met Malan. Make a long story short, met Malan in the medical library, and she said, "Don't tell my parents we live on a boat." And I said, "Malan, this is not a boat, this is a yacht." And she says, "They don't know yacht. all they know is boat." And in China, boat people are the inner city, the slums, the very poor, the ignorant, the nasty people, the criminals. And she said, "They would commit suicide if they thought I married a boatman." Because remember, she's a surgeon. She taught surgery at Harvard Medical School. And here she is marrying this boat person, right? that wouldn't go over very big.
One of the first microsurgeons.
Yeah, right? A microsurgeon, taught microsurgery at Harvard. And of course, she was in Texas because Michael Cooley and DeBakey, the heart transplant surgeons, wanted her because she'd published so many nice papers. So she's quite famous in her own right. And so that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Many of us, all of us, are proud, proud distributors of this amazing profession of network marketing, right? And many of you do not know that before there was a Scott Fardulis, before there was a Dr. Luis Arriaza, before there was a Tom Chenault, there was Mr. Dr.